I really wanted to be able to get up here and tell you that Murray State was leading. I think they're tied right now. But I appreciate the sacrifice you're all making to be here with us tonight. And I know that some of you have come from several hours away, and I myself have come from about 6 hours away, and I'm so happy to be here with you tonight. If I had a chance to sit down with you and have a conversation, I think I would start out by asking you about how you ended up living here and what you like about it. And that sounds like the most boring question ever, right? Where are you from? But I've gotten some interesting answers from asking this question. And maybe the most interesting one was from this lady, Gertie Moore. Let's see if we can get the clicker to actually work. So I met Gertie Moore when I was on a writing assignment for Reader's Digest, and she lives in a tiny town in West Virginia called Laredo, and I was writing about something that happened in that area, and she agreed to be my guide to her location. So I went to her house, and she got in the front seat of my car, and she said, you know, I'll show you around. Why don't we start by driving to the top of my street? And so we did. I drove to the top of her street, and there she told me something that absolutely blew my mind. She said, I have lived on this same street my whole life. And it wasn't the same house. She showed me. She started out, you know, came home from the hospital as a baby to the house at the top of the street, and then her family moved a few years after that to the next house down. And when she got married, she moved to a house a little further down the hill. And when they had a lot of kids, then they moved to a different house that was a little bit bigger, but always on the same street. And she was in her 60s. And that blew my mind because we're not getting the clicker. Oh, there we go. That blew my mind because here's a map of the places that I've lived. Started out in California, grew up there, went to high school, then went to Utah for college, and then across the country to Maryland, and then my husband and I started ping-ponging back and forth. We went back to Utah, and then to Iowa, and then to Texas, and then to Virginia. And I am not even average. The average person moves 12 times in their life. And that makes me less than average. I bet there are people here, maybe people associated with the military base, who can blow me out of the water on the number of times that they've moved. Wish I could get the clicker to work. A third of Americans still live in the town where they grew up. So those are the Gertie Moores, the people who have never moved in their entire life. And I bet we have that mix in this room tonight. So let me just see a raise of hands. How many of the people here tonight consider themselves from here, that this is your hometown and you've lived here, if not your whole life, then most of it? Raise your hand. A really good chunk of the room. Now about the rest of you. How many of you consider yourself fairly recent transplants, maybe in the past 5 years or so? Raise your hand. I see a couple hands out in the gloaming. So we are a mix of people who are sort of the restless souls who move a lot and the people who find our community and we want to stay there. I wrote an entire book about people that I call anywhereists. They are people who are remote workers, or maybe they're entrepreneurs, or they're retired people, or maybe they're lawyers or doctors or teachers, the kind of people who can find a job in any community all across the country and sometimes the world. And that means they have the freedom to design their lives by choosing where they live. We saw the number of anywhereists in the world really explode during COVID, when a lot of people found that their normal go-to-the-office jobs all of a sudden went remote. And they asked themselves this question: I think I can move anywhere. Where do I want to live? And on the other hand, were these small towns and rural communities who said, there's a whole group of people out there who now are thinking about moving, and what can we do to get them to consider our place? So, maybe. There's a website called makemymove.com that catalogs towns that sort of make offers that offer people who are remote workers who could make these decisions live anywhere. They actually say, hey, if you move to our community, we'll give you $5,000 or we'll give you $10,000. Here's one from Graves County, Kentucky. If you move to Graves County and you're a remote worker and you're bringing your job along with you, then they will give you $5,000 just to move there. And not just that, you get to have lunch with the mayor, and for a year, you get a dozen locally grown eggs a month, which if you have seen the price of eggs lately, you know, like, that is pretty awesome. Oops. One day we'll figure this out. So one couple that took advantage of a deal like this was Anna and Joe Kuykendall. They were living in Orlando, Florida, and they had lived there for 5 years or so. They were both remote workers, and for a long time, they really loved Orlando. It was meeting their needs. And then Orlando started growing, and things started getting really expensive, and they started thinking, we don't have to live in Orlando. We can really go anywhere. So they kind of went down that internet rabbit hole trying to find, if we can live anywhere, where should we live? And they ended up stumbling across one of these communities that offered a deal like this. And it was the Shoals, Alabama. The Shoals ran a program called Remote Shoals. And they said, if you have a remote job and you move here, we'll give you $10,000 to come to our community. That was pretty enticing to Anna and Joe, and they checked it out. So the thing they loved about the Shoals was, yes, the cost of living was low, and yes, they'd get that $10,000 bonus, but even more, they loved that it was this small town where they could go and they could feel like they were part of a community. It was the life they saw for themselves raising their son. They wanted to be in a place like that. We know from research that Anna and Joe are pretty typical in what they're looking for. This is the DCI Talent Wars report from 2024, and I don't know if you can see, but it's divided into Gen Z, Millennials, and Gen X, what they're looking for when they relocate. And pretty much the number one thing for all of them is housing availability and housing costs. So they are really average. They're looking for low cost of living, and we totally get that, right? Like, housing costs have exploded in the last few years. They've grown by 35%. Inflation is up more than 10%. So it makes sense. People are looking for low cost of living, but they also want high quality of life. Some of the things that came up in this survey were things like safety, quality healthcare. They want to live in a place where they don't have a long commute. They want to be close to their family. That high quality of life thing is a little nebulous, but I tend to think of it as just, you want to live a good life. You want to be able to have the kind of life you want in the place that you choose. So looking at this chart makes it seem like we're just making these smart decisions about where we live and we're looking at the data and stuff. But what I find is that humans are actually really irrational about places. We're irrational about a lot of things, but we're especially irrational about places. We're irrational about our decisions on where to live. I told you about Anna and Joe, but someone else that I interviewed for my book, If You Could Live Anywhere, was a woman named Amy who was living in Seattle with her husband, and cost of living was really high. They were remote workers. They started having this anywhere-ist conversation. We could really do our jobs from anywhere. Where should we go? And what they settled on, what mattered more to them than anything else, was they wanted to raise backyard chickens. That was kind of the thing. They wanted to live in a place that was a little cheaper and a little slower, but more than anything, they wanted to raise backyard chickens. And that was how they made the decision about where to go. So we're rational about where we choose to live, but we're also irrational about why we stay there. So the sociologist Richard Florida says that there are three kinds of people in the world based on our relationship with our place. First are people who are mobile. They are movers. That means they're never in one place very long. They're kind of in a nomadic season of their life, and they don't really put down roots or deeply connect with any place they go. Second are people who are stuck. Those are people who maybe have been in their community a long time, or maybe not that long, but they kind of feel trapped there. Trapped by a job, trapped by a house, trapped by family circumstances. They don't love where they live, but they also don't feel like they have a ton of options for changing that. And then there is this magical third category, and those are the people who are rooted. So rooted people sometimes have been in their communities their whole lives, and sometimes they've only been there for a few months. But what is different about rooted people is that they love it there. They are happy in their community. They are choosing to stay. When I met Gertie Moore, I thought she was stuck. She was living in this tiny nowhere town in West Virginia, and I just thought to myself, why doesn't she just pick up and move away? She could go anywhere. Why doesn't she move to a bigger city? Why doesn't she move to a place with a little more opportunity? And what I didn't know until I got in the car with Gertie and we started driving around Laredo, West Virginia, was that Gertie was not stuck. She was rooted. She knew everyone in the town. She had driven a school bus in Laredo for 40 years. Every house represented a family, and every family represented a story or a series of stories. She knew everything about this place. She was kind of the reigning queen of Laredo, West Virginia. She was rooted. And that was something that I knew I wanted for myself, because at the time I met Gertie, I had just moved. I had moved from big city, Austin, Texas, to relatively small Blacksburg, Virginia. This was not an anywhereist move. It was an old-fashioned, you know, my husband got a job at Virginia Tech University, and I followed along. But we really thought, you know, oh, this is going to be an awesome move. We were super excited about it. Blacksburg is a town of about 40,000 people, kind of around the size of Hopkinsville, and we just thought, this is going to be great. We are going to love it here. Fresh start. It's going to be awesome. And then we got there, and it was not awesome. Very quickly, we realized that it rained a lot. People said, oh yeah, we call it Bleaksburg. And we didn't know anyone. We had no friends in town. We didn't know our way around. I went to the hardware store to get some keys cut, and I felt like I needed subtitles for the guys behind the counter because their accents were so thick, that thick Appalachian accent. And it made me think, what terrible mistake have we made moving to Blacksburg? And how can we undo this, like, right now? Because I had been mobile for a while, you know, my family had moved around a lot, my immediate response was, okay, we are just gonna move again. We are gonna move away, we're gonna find a new place and settle there. You know, we've given it a good solid month and it's not working out, so it's time to move on. But you know, my husband had just started this new job, my kids were in new schools, and I realized that moving was not necessarily the solution. What the solution was learning to actually be happy in my adopted hometown. So I became very obsessed with this question. What makes people love where they live? I could see that there were people around me in Blacksburg who really liked it there. And I just wasn't feeling it, but I wanted to feel it. I really wanted to drink that Kool-Aid. And because I've been a writer and a journalist for most of my career, my approach to challenges like this is I'm going to see what the experts say. And so I got online and I sort of dove into the academic research around putting down roots and around what makes people love where they live. And I came across a concept that ended up changing my life and I think could change yours too. It is an idea called place attachment. So place attachment is a term that crops up in the scientific literature that psychologists and scientists use to describe that feeling of being deeply at home in a place, of being rooted, of feeling like this is where I belong and I don't want to be anyplace else. I am happy here. So you've probably felt this, and we're going to talk a little bit more tonight about how to recognize it in yourself. But it's a very emotional concept, right? Kind of like a touchy-feely concept. Yeah, okay, you like your place. But it turns out that place attachment has a ton of concrete benefits. So place attachment has been known to improve well-being. So meaning that if you are place attached, you just tend to feel better about most aspects of your life. Place attached people have higher levels of social capital, meaning they have more of those kinds of relationships that help them accomplish things. Place attached people have higher levels of self-esteem. They just feel better. And I think that's related to something called place identity, that when you're really attached to your place, you sort of see it as a positive reflection of yourself. If you feel good about your place, you feel good about yourself. Place attached people are even healthier. So there are studies that show that place attached people are less likely to have a heart attack or stroke. There's even studies that show that they that they live longer on average than those who don't. Can we go back one? Okay. So in 2008, the Knight Foundation partnered with Gallup on a study called The Soul of the Community. And what they did was survey 26,000 people in communities all across the country over the course of 3 years. So big cities like Miami and tiny towns like Milledgeville, Georgia, and they asked people all sorts of questions about how they felt about their community. And at the end of the three-year study, they came to a rather startling conclusion, which was, can you advance it? Thanks. That as place attachment rises in a community, so does local GDP. Meaning that when people like where they live, they love the community, they feel rooted there, the community tends to do better economically. And when I first heard that, I thought, okay, that's kind of a chicken and an egg thing, but maybe it's just that people like to live in places that are doing well. But the people who ran the study said it's actually the opposite. John Clifton from Gallup said, our theory is that when a community's residents are highly attached, they will spend more time there, spend more money, they're more productive, and tend to be more entrepreneurial. So what is happening? Well, I think it's that place-attached people behave a little differently. They act in ways that are good for them, things like volunteering, getting involved in their community, getting connected to neighbors. And they also act in ways that are great for their town. They buy houses, They shop locally. They eat at local restaurants. They volunteer. They donate. They invest. They do things that are great for everyone, great for their town, and great for where they live. So let me show you an example of what this might look like with a little video from the author John Green. So John Green wrote the book The Fault in Our Stars and many others, and he is a transplant to Indianapolis. And so when someone online started, you know, talking a little smack about Indiana, he fought back. And I think it's a good example of what place attachment actually looks like.
Well, you don't get views like this at your Target in Indiana, Rebecca.
Heard some people were talking shit about Indianapolis.
Welcome to the 12th largest city in America. We've got beautiful canals.
And we got one of the best art parks in the country. Plus, it's free. Let's go check it out.
This one by Joop van Lieshout's probably my favorite, although I'm biased because my wife helped curate it and I put it in one of my books as a love letter to her. But you don't have to like art. Look at our wildflower gardens.
We've also got some real excellent mountain biking and gravel biking. I mean, look at this. Gorgeous.
Yes, Indianapolis has all this to offer and so much more. Plus, our houses are like 3 times less than yours, but I'm glad you have a good view from your Target.
So he actually does mention housing costs, right? So there's that logic coming in that, you know, there are some things we can point to on a list and say, yes, we are doing this well. We have affordable housing. But the rest of it is just stuff that he loves about Indiana. He talked about art. He talked about cycling. He talked about wildflowers. I think Indiana is one of those places that if you don't live in Indiana, maybe you're like, meh, you know, it's the great flyover. We're not talking a ton about Indiana. Maybe Kentucky sometimes feels the same way, right? People are not really giving you your due. People are not paying attention to what makes Kentucky great. But you guys are the insiders. And you know what makes Kentucky great. And maybe you too could fiercely defend your place against someone who would insult it. And that is part of place attachment. So before we go any further, we're going to talk about how attached you really are to where you live. I'm going to give you a place attachment pop quiz. So when scientists are looking into place attachment and they want to see how attached people really are to where they live, really the only way to measure it is to just ask people questions, ask people what they think about their own level of attachment. And so that is what I'm going to do with you tonight, very non-scientific, but I'm going to show you 10 statements, one at a time, and I want you to answer for yourself whether your answer is yes or no. And I want you to keep track of how many times you say yes. And we will come back at the end and I'll have you tally them up. So 10 statements, you probably have 10 fingers. No guarantees. But otherwise, you can maybe write your answers on a little piece of paper if you want. But just keep track of how many times you say yes for where you live now. So 1, I feel comfortable here. 2, I know my way around. 3, the friendships I have with people in my community mean a lot to me. 4, I like to tell people about where I live. 5, I'm really interested in knowing what's going on here. let's see if we can get that up and running. But we were on question 6, which was, I can rely on people in this town to help me. So 7, my town isn't perfect, but there are a lot of things that make me love it. Next, If something exciting were happening here, I'd want to be involved. 9, I care about the future success of my town. And last, 10, it feels like home. Okay, let's take a second. Add up how you scored on the place attachment pop quiz. And let's do a quick survey of the room. Okay, so raise your hand if you scored a 7 or above on the place attachment quiz. Okay, I would say it seems like the vast majority of the room. And I think a 7 is a solid place attachment score. You do not need to score perfect on this. 7 is right in there. It means that you're attached, you're doing it, you love where you live. Some people do score a perfect 10. So let's see. Raise your hand if you scored a 10. Wow. A lot of 10s in this room. You guys are the Gertie Moores of your community, right? Like, you are amazing. I love that for you. Here's the interesting thing. I'm not terribly surprised because you are a self-selected group here, right? You are people who turned up on a Monday night to come to this annual dinner of the Pennyrail Area Development District, and that means that chances are pretty good that you are somehow involved in your community, right? Maybe you're an elected official, maybe you work for your town, your county, the development district, you're on a committee. You do all sorts of things that mean serving your community is part of your why. Loving your place is part of why you do what you do, or at least it can be. On the other hand, sometimes when you have those jobs or those volunteer opportunities that put you in really close contact with your community, there can be a hit to place attachment. Not gonna lie. If you're an elected official and you realize that being on your town council means you are constantly hearing crap from everyone about every choice you ever make, that can take a hit to your place attachment. Maybe it means that you're serving in a role where you are very well versed in everything that is going wrong in your town. That can make place attachment hard. Maybe you have had opportunities to interact with what I've heard called the cave people, citizens against virtually everything, and that can be hard too. So it's not necessarily a given that place attachment just happens naturally because of your job, working for the community, because you volunteer with the community. I didn't ask anyone to admit whether they scored, you know, a 1 or a 2 or a 3, but if I had taken this place attachment pop quiz back when I was new in Blacksburg, I definitely would have scored a 0, because none of that was true for me back then. But here's what I want you to know about place attachment. It is malleable, meaning it changes. It changes over time. It can change in response to things that are happening in our lives, to things that are happening in our community. And we can actively make it change. So place attached people behave a little differently. And back when I was in Blacksburg and I was learning about this, my theory became, if I start behaving differently, if I start behaving like a place attached person behaves, then maybe I will start to feel some of those place attachment emotions to go along with it. So that became my very unscientific hypothesis and my goal in Blacksburg. So I looked at the scientific literature and I identified 10 broad behaviors that are correlated with increased place attachment. And for each of them, I developed what I call the love where you live experiment, which is basically just like a little action step, a little behavior change that was designed to make me love my adopted community a little more. So for instance, there's tons of research that shows if you walk and bike in your community, you're more likely to develop mental maps, you learn your way around your community, that helps you feel more attached. So I started walking and biking more. There's research that if you spend time in nature and experience it, that that helps you love your place at a very elemental level. And so I started hiking more and camping in my area. I volunteered at the local nonprofit historic movie theater because volunteering is just like the thing that cures all ills. I voted, I shopped local, I did all these things. And I wrote about them in detail in my book, This Is Where You Belong, but I'm going to go ahead and give you the spoiler alert right now, which is that it worked. Not all at once. It was kind of slowly over time, and not everything. I definitely had some fails along the way, but it changed my feeling about my town. It made me fall in love with Blacksburg. I remember the day I sort of had this realization. I was riding my bike, and my daughter and I were going downtown, and we were going to go visit the farmers market and the library, which were two of my favorite places in town. And the sun was shining, which Bleaksburg didn't always do. But I all of a sudden just had this feeling of well-being wash over me. And I just thought, I really love it here, and I don't want to move. Which was totally weird because I had always wanted to move. Ever since I got there, I had wanted to move. Moving was a core part of my identity. But I had put down enough roots and developed enough place attachment that for the first time ever, I actually wanted to stay where I was. And these are principles and behaviors that anyone can adopt anywhere. So no matter how well you did on that place attachment pop quiz, you probably have some room for growth. Or you probably know people in your life who maybe have a little room for growth with place attachment. So for the rest of our time together, I just want to share three broad ideas that I feel are things that you can do in your life right now, every day, that will help you feel more attached to where you live right now, here in the Penny Rile. So first, see the good. Living in a place, being in a relationship with a place, is a lot like being in a relationship with a person. It is really good most of the time, but not always. You know, there are those times when the person you're with snores, or they leave their socks all over, or they don't load the dishwasher how you wanted them to load the dishwasher. Places are like that too. They're really good, and we can love them a lot, but they definitely have their issues. So my friends at SaveYourTown.com did this survey of rural community challenges, and you can see that rural communities, small town communities, do indeed have challenges. The housing shortage, downtown is dead, not enough volunteers, lack of childcare, healthcare lacking, poor internet service. We could talk all day about some of these problems. But that same study found a rather interesting thing as well, which was that twice as many residents of small towns say they feel optimistic about their community's future than residents of larger cities. So even though our small towns have problems, we believe that we can overcome them. And actually, that perception, that belief in and hope for our small towns is everything. I mentioned that Soul of the Community study before, and in the first year of the Soul of the Community study, Grand Forks, North Dakota ranked number one on measures of social offerings, meaning that people who lived in Grand Forks, North Dakota thought their place had tons to do and people to do it with. And it beat out larger, much larger cities like Miami and Charlotte and Denver. I don't know when you have last been to Grand Forks, North Dakota, but I think objectively speaking, we can say that Grand Forks does not have the beaches of a Miami, and it doesn't have the sports stadiums of a Charlotte. But that doesn't matter. What really matters is what the people who live there think about their place. So it doesn't matter that Grand Forks is a small town and doesn't have everything in the world going on in it. It just matters that people who live there feel like it's doing a good job and that there is enough for them. This video that I'm going to show you next kind of shows you what it's like if you choose to not see the good in your community.
Fun times in Cleveland again.
Still Cleveland.
Come on down to Cleveland Town, everyone. Under construction since 1868. See our river that catches on fire. It's so polluted that all our fish have AIDS. We see the sun almost three times a year. This guy has at least two DUIs. Flats look like a Scooby-Doo ghost town. Don't slow down in East Cleveland or you'll die.
It's funnier when you don't live in Cleveland. I made the mistake one time of showing this to an audience in Cleveland. They did not enjoy it that much. But the reality is, we could make a video like that about any community, right? We could definitely make a video like that about my town, Blacksburg. I think every town has their version of the Scooby-Doo ghost town or the construction that never ends. And we can choose to see our places that way. Or we can choose to see them in a slightly different way, as with this next video, which is also about Cleveland.
I've seen the river burning, white sails shining off the Emerald Coast. I watched a star being born on stage, guys behind glass at the Hall of Fame. I've heard the sax man flatter downtown streets. Captivating sounds, brass, wind, and strings. I've stood in the shadow of peace, beneath stone guardians protecting Hope's fleet. I wandered through a tunnel at the bottom of the sea, over the edge to the streets beneath.
That video is just like, that's about the same place. The same city with the Scooby-Doo ghost town also has all this cool stuff that makes you want to move there or at least visit. And definitely they spent more money on that second video, I'm pretty sure. But I think it tells you that there are lots of different ways to see where we live, and we can choose to see the things that are great about it. So Fred Kent from Project for Public Space has said, around the world, citizens are defining their future by focusing on their city's civic assets, authentic qualities, and compelling destinations. So that means every town is offering something different. Every town has its own qualities, its own assets, its own destinations that could potentially draw people in, and we just have to focus on that. You guys have those things too. You have museums, you have rivers and lakes and state parks and festivals and historic downtowns and beauty. And you just have to recognize all you have to offer and appreciate it. When I was working on my Love Where You Live experiments in Blacksburg, I decided, you know, every town is good at something. Do what your town is good at. And for me, in Blacksburg, trying to put down roots, trying to develop a relationship with my town, I decided, this is a university town, and you know what's really big here? College football. I am not a person who cares really anything at all about football, but I decided, as someone who wanted to act like a place-attached person acts, that I would get into it, at least a little. So I bought tickets, and I bought a t-shirt, and I went to a Hokie football game. So the important thing here is that it's probably not buying the ticket, it's more buying the t-shirt. Wearing the t-shirt that says, where you're from, and what matters to you. I have found that there's a lot of similarities between being a sports fan and being place attached, because all of a sudden, you are part of the team. You don't actually play necessarily, but when the team wins, you win. You care about it, you'll talk it up to whoever. And so for me, trying to put down roots in Blacksburg, buying the shirt, wearing the shirt was the metaphorical equivalent of saying, I'm part of the team. And you can do that too where you live. You can buy the shirt and be a part of the team. So see the good in your community. Second, build connections. So one of the things that I've learned about place attachment, thanks. One of the things that I've learned about place attachment is that it's really difficult to feel place attached if you don't have relationships in your place. I remember going to a conference and talking to someone who said, you know, I love a lot of things about the city where I live, but I just don't have friends here. So I'm probably not going to stay. And that is the story of place attachment, that we need relationships and friendships in our community to feel like we want to stay there. For the many of you who are born and raised in this area, you probably have family around. That may be a huge part of your sense of rootedness. In my studies, people who live within an hour of five family members were far more likely to feel place attached than people who didn't. But nevertheless, despite that, 61% of us feel lonely always or sometimes. Many of us are trying to make friends outside the family, and it's not always easy. I think the question I get most often is, how do you make friends as an adult? Well, when I was trying to do this in Blacksburg, the thing that I worked on was getting to know my neighbors. There was tons of research that said having strong relationships with your neighbors was key to place attachment. Having relationships built on trust made you feel rooted. And so there's a, you know, fake holiday in September called Good Neighbor Day, and I use it as an excuse to take around banana bread to my neighbors. And that turned into conversations, which turned into inviting people over for dinner, which turned into getting invited back, which turned into when I was at an appointment and I wouldn't get home in time to get my kindergarten daughter off the school bus, I could text my neighbor and ask her if she would, and she said, yes, of course, because that's what trusting relationships look like with neighbors. And that relationship, that term neighbors, can mean almost anything we want it to mean, and usually it can mean our whole community. So in Wilmore, Kentucky, which is a town of about 6,500, there's a little grocery store called Fitch's IGA Food Liner. And it's run by a guy named Leonard Fitch, who believes that he was put on God's green earth to run a grocery store. And he uses it kind of as his personal ministry to his neighbors. He was elected to his town council 26 times in a row without putting out a single campaign sign. When people need someone to officiate at a funeral, they call Leonard. If there is someone in Wilmore who's in need, groceries will appear on their doorstep, courtesy of Leonard, who never says a word and never wants any thanks. He just wants to take care of his neighbors the way he knows how. And Fitch's did great for a long time, and like a lot of smaller groceries and like a lot of locally owned stores, when the Walmart opened in the next town over and the dollar store opened in Wilmore, Fitch's grocery store began to really struggle and suffer. And it started looking a little shabby around the edges because it just wasn't selling enough. They stopped turning a profit. And Leonard was pulling money out of his own savings just to keep the store afloat without telling anyone what he was doing. Well, one day, a new person wandered into his grocery store, and it was a guy named Jay Leeson, who had just moved to Wilmore. He was a student at Asbury Theological Seminary, and he was feeling really overwhelmed and stressed, and he was in this new place, and he went to the grocery store to buy a couple things for dinner, and Leonard was working the cash register, and he said, "How are you doing?" And Jay said, "Yeah, I'm fine." And Leonard said, "No, how are you doing?" And just that little bit of being seen and being recognized changed Jay's day. And he decided that he would turn around and see Leonard as well. He saw that the grocery store was struggling a little bit, and he started to help out. He'd grab a broom and he'd sweep a little, and he started talking to Leonard about what was going on and their economic struggles and how his wife was sick. And Jay decided he wanted to do something to help. So he organized a group called Fitch's Neighbors, and he brought in people to help get the grocery store back on its feet, so to speak. So they cleaned everything in the grocery store. They painted it inside and out. Volunteers came and they overhauled the inventory. Jay brought in people with business expertise to look at Jay's operations plans. People donated a new lift that would help unload trucks. And they started a buy local program, encouraging people who lived in Wilmore to buy the fixings for 3 meals a week at Fitch's. And he knew that Fitch's was going to be a little more expensive. But for Jay, he said, "Our economic practice of bargain over neighbor isn't only incompatible with what we say we believe, it's incompatible with the survival of our community. Fitch's can't offer the selection or prices of the discount stores, but somehow he's still offering neighborliness." And in a lot of small towns, neighborliness matters. It's one of the great things we have going for us. So I just checked, and Fitch's IGA Foodliner is still around, it's still kicking, and Leonard Fitch just turned 85. So this plan of Fitch's Neighbors, this program, worked. And it worked to create a feeling of neighborliness in the community that matters. We see that right here with some of the things that the Penny Ryle Area Development District is doing by building and supporting senior centers and meals, home-delivered meals that bring senior citizens together with people who care about them. And this stuff isn't just kind of like touchy-feely, oh, that's nice. It actually matters. When people are connected in communities, it makes them more resilient. I know y'all have had more than your fair share of natural disasters lately, so maybe you'll be interested to know about a study that took place in Japan after the tsunami, and a researcher found that the communities that had the highest survival rates from the tsunami were the communities that had the highest levels of connection, of relationships, of neighborliness before the tsunami. And some of that was just really practical. You knew that your neighbor was in that house, and so you were willing to help them get out. But some of it was, when I love the senior citizen who lives next door, I'm willing to put my own life at risk to rescue them and get up the hill to safety. So connecting with people around us makes our communities better, it makes us love where we live, and it makes us more resilient. Finally, we can create the place you want to live. It used to be that you moved to a community and you just kind of like waited for it to bestow its services on you, and you only ever really even noticed when something went wrong, right? Like, oh, the snow didn't get plowed, or the garbage didn't get taken away, now I'm gonna complain. But now what we see in communities is a bit of a new vibe, that people want to be more involved in creating the community where they live. The cities that succeed, said Ethan Kent, are the ones that allow people to help create them. That's how they become better places, but also how people are going to become more attached to them. So when we're deeply involved in our community, when we are making it something that we want to see, that process builds our own place attachment while it makes our community better. So we can see that in examples like Jason Vincent and crew going to Capitol Hill to advocate for things that they want to see in this community in the Penny Ryle. But we also see it in lots of different ways. When I tried to do something like this in Blacksburg as a Love Where You Live experiment, I wanted to start a sidewalk Chalk Art Festival and quickly realized that starting festivals is really hard, and so it kind of became like a sidewalk chalk art activity at the farmers market. But there was something really cool about seeing all this art in the street and thinking to myself, that wouldn't have been there if I hadn't had this idea and if I hadn't brought the supplies and made something interesting happen. So that can look like this example in Akron, Iowa, where community members got together to convert a vacant lot in the downtown into a parklet. Or it can look like this example in Fargo, North Dakota, of a canoe parade. This started, you know, with just like some friends dressing up in costumes and canoeing down the river, but now it has become like a huge festival that people love and they want to take part in. Or it can be like painting a crosswalk in your downtown just to make something beautiful and colorful. The artist Morag Myerskoff says that this is how we make people want to come to our community. She says, make happy those who are near, and those who are far will come. So you don't need to pay people $5,000 or $10,000 to come to your community. You just make a place where people are happy to live that's beautiful and fun and connected and enjoyable, and outside people start to notice. And even if they don't, it doesn't matter because you love it here. You're the place attached people, and you're building it for you. One of the examples I like best of this kind of ground-up placemaking comes from Germany. A guy named Tim Schneider makes these sort of styrofoam eyeballs, and he puts them on things in the community, like mailboxes and garbage cans. And there's really no reason to do that other than just to create a little bit of joy, a little bit of delight in your community. And it's an easy sort of thing to do. So the thing about googly eyes is they will not solve all your problems. We've talked about some of the problems that rural places and small communities can have. I'm sure you guys could make a long list. But what these googly eyes and other things that we love about our community do is remind us of all the good there is to see and how much power we have to create even more good in our communities, to do good for our place in a way that makes us love it more. So place-attached people behave differently. And you too, no matter what your score was on the place attachment pop quiz, you too can behave differently. You can behave like a place-attached person, and I believe that doing so will grow your attachment to where you live right now, here in the Pennyryle. That it will make you love a place that I think a lot of you already love even more. So that means seeing the good, deciding that, you know, yes, we have issues, but there's also a lot of great things going on, and we can notice that. That we can build connections and be in relationship with the people around us, practice the art of neighborliness, care for those in the community who are trying to make good things happen. And last, we can create the place we want to live. So, talked in the beginning about Gertie Moore, and I think the reality is that she is like a lot of you. She's committed to her place and to making it better. We all have our own stories about where we live and why we chose it, but we are constantly writing a new story every day about why we stay, what value we find in our community, and what value we can offer it. So I challenge you to be the people who act differently, love your place, and make it better as you love it. Thank you so much.